You're with Stateside. I'm April Baer. We've spent the past couple of weeks marking the various ways that major changes have rolled into our lives with the pandemic, whether in education, our workplaces, or Michigan's economy. We wanted to wrap up this somber one-year anniversary with something a little bit more introspective, how things have changed for us on an individual level. Obviously, that's a lot harder to pin down, since the pandemic has meant something different to everyone. But undoubtedly, it's forced us to all look at the whole of our lives and think about what can change to help us get our arms around something that's at the same time granular and universal. We're calling up two people who help us with that sort of thing here on Stateside regularly. Desiree Cooper is a writer from Detroit, and Keith Taylor is a writer and lecturer emeritus with the University of Michigan. Des, Keith, welcome back. It is so nice to be with you.
Good to be back. Good to still be here.
That's right. And to hear you, April, at the end of all this. That helps, too.
Can I ask both of you how you've been weathering the pandemic? Des, can you bring us up to date? I know you are out of state looking after your mom right now.
Yeah, and in some ways, I've been on lockdown for almost 5 years now, taking care of my senior parents. My dad passed away late last year. My mom's still with us.
Yeah, so sorry to hear about your father.
Oh, I appreciate that. It was not a COVID-related death, but of course, the pandemic affected everything from how we were able to send him off to what kind of care he had access to in the end. And even his death certificate came months late because there was so much demand, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, oh my goodness, it just feels like how will we ever be the same people we were in 2019?
I guess that's just it. I don't know if we will. Keith, how are things going with you?
Oh, I feel as if, I've had it so easy. But of course, when I start looking back, it's not. I mean, we all have our list of agonies and difficulties. I've been pretty good. I've gone out grocery shopping. I've gone to the pharmacy, always trying to be as careful as I could. I only took one trip. A very good friend had a child die by suicide. Mm. So I went to be with him for a while. Another friend who lives over in HUD housing in Ypsilanti, I've just felt the need to get him out. So I talk to him a little more on phone than I usually have. I get him out for a walk in the parks now and then. But otherwise, I've pretty much been here in my study where I would have been spending most of my time anyway. So it's changed things. How things will change in the future, I have no idea.
It feels like a significant part of this story is that magnification that you both kind of touched on in different ways about how the difficulties of life just have become a magnitude different because of this pandemic. And the fact that both of you are so intentional in your use of language, I feel like you've probably thought about this at least a little bit. Would you say, is that the hardest part about what we're going through is just the extra intensity on top of everything else right now? Keith, what do you think of that?
The extra intensity on top of everything else, there's a phrase. We can chisel it in stone, April. I think that's it. Life is intense now. And some of my positive responses have been intense, more so than perhaps they might have been otherwise. But boy, you got to think long and hard about going to get your groceries and only want to go once a week and make sure you get everything else. That's a kind of intentional living that probably I had not been doing in 2019.
Is that intensity something that you've had to find words for during, I guess, your extended lockdown, or is that something that you've had to figure out how to communicate?
I remember telling a friend recently, has life been this hard for everyone all this time? And we just didn't realize it. I mean, now that a lot of other distractions are gone and we are, as you say, April, more intent on connection, like you have to work at it. Yeah. I I feel like the woman who reads the sick and shut-in list at the Baptist services every Sunday, I mean, the list of people that I'm trying to keep track of and checking on, the number of people who've lost loved ones, who've suffered other kinds of sort of quote-unquote normal everyday losses, the people who are aging in place. And I feel like all of those are with me all day. And I feel like I just can't even balance. I mean, the stripped down life has suddenly flared up in such a big blazing way. I just cannot. It's very difficult to cope.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Where have you been looking for joy?
Well, I don't want to be a braggart, but sunshine and good weather goes a long way. And having left Michigan, especially in the winters, and to move to the Atlantic coast of Virginia has been a godsend for me. I don't know how I would have managed without those long walks that were daunting for me in the cold, but I can do those very well now. And I will say grandchildren, you know, are the noisiest, most disruptive, most chaotic joys in my life. And I feel like sometimes where things have been stripped down to its Zen simplicity, that both children and the aged have taught me so much more about the present than I think I would have learned otherwise.
Is there something that comes to mind that you've picked up that you think you'll be carrying with you for a long time after this?
Yeah, that I'm going to call it American entitlement, that you have control enough to make everything okay. Yeah. And I've been stripped of that. And that's a heavy thing because it makes you a control freak and it makes you constantly at the behest of the normal waves of things that happen in life. And so I'll just say now that while I do have expectations, but I am not invested in them in the way that I used to be. And I have been able to look around. I mean, fortunately, I'm 61 and I can say, well, you know what? It's been a pretty good run. So everything else is gravy. Not that I'm thinking about going anywhere anytime soon, but I'm also locked down in place with my 33-year-old son, who hasn't really had a chance to launch and have his experiences in life. And so together we've been trying to figure out what is the most precious. I mean, I hear him playing the guitar and I just think it's the most beautiful sound in the world. And I remember a time when I'd say, shut that noise up. I can't stand it. And he takes the cardboard boxes that I'm saving and he says, Mom, are we still saving this for the apocalypse? You know, he sees me now is that depression era baby that we used to talk about in past generations, that now I've been changed by, you know, what I think I should save, how I should conserve, how I should spend time, what is family, and what brings you joy, simple joys.
Mm. Keith, how about you? Are there things that are lightening up the days a bit that you maybe didn't expect?
Well, I've often said this about other things, even before the pandemic, but I am so happy and thankful that I have an art in my life, that I can always turn to that when many people don't have something they can turn to. But these, you know, these books are here, my own feeble attempts to get words on paper, that's just a real joy. I have to echo D2 on the family thing. My daughter was in graduate school at Wayne State when all this started. She was living down in the Cass Corridor there, and her apartment building had a major fire 3 months before she graduated.
Mm.
So she came home because they were doing, and of course everything went online 2 weeks later. So she came home for 3 months, and my wife would be working downstairs in the study. My daughter Faith would be working at the kitchen table, and I'd be up here trying to work in my study. And you know what? It was great. Now, she's 30, and we knew she wasn't going to stay, but it was certainly wonderful having her here. And I don't think she hated it either, so that felt good.
Now, Keith just told us that he has been able to read and to get some work done. Des, how's it going with you? Have you been able to read?
Not really. I mean, I read at it, but often I'm reading the same thing over. I don't remember what I've read. I'm reading a book now. I got to 15 pages before I'd be done, and I put it down. I'm not going to pick it back up. I'm a mess. I say my brain is now like a steel sieve. You know, yeah. It retains nothing. And my concentration is zero. I do still try to write and try to be productive. But again, I go back to those expectations. You know, if a blooming flower pulls me outside in the middle of writing something, I'm going outside. If I decide I'm going to make myself the most fantastic carb-heavy meal I can make, that's what I'm going to do. You know, if my mother needs to be entertained because nobody else is around, I'm going to play with dolls with my mom. So I have a disastrous lack of focus at this point. I'm depressed. I'm definitely depressed. Mm-hmm. And so I have to work every day on, you know, you just have to be. And that has to be enough. And I think even now that there might be some light at the end of the tunnel, even though we don't even really know what that looks like, what is being and how is that going to look? I walk this same path almost all the time. And in this really bushy tree, there's one little branch that sticks up that has no leaves on it. It's like somebody forgot to give it a haircut, and it's just a cowlick sticking up. And on that cowlick, there's one bird singing at me every time I go by. One bird sitting on this cowlick in this bushy tree. And I posted this morning, it might be too late. This might be who I am at the end of, you know, the pandemic, where I'm sitting apart and above on this one little cowlick, watching everything else growing around me and kind of screaming at it from afar. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not so sure how interactive I'm going to feel with the world. You know, you kind of get into this hermit space. I walk and now I'm wondering, like, do I even want other people in that space to bring in their worries into a space of peace? Like, I want the beach to be empty when I go. I want the parks to be empty when I go. Is that weird?
No. No, it's not. And I mean, I wonder how much of this has to do with the demands of caregiving in addition to, you know, the habit of the pandemic. But I wonder for people who are juggling multiple things in this way, Des, I wonder if it's even useful to separate it out in that way, or if it's just the time that is right now.
Right. And whether it's more of a phase, you know, after time I'll be, I mean, honestly, we have all become uneasy with humans, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's almost like we have to reacclimate to being in community.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling that kind of acutely, like part of me doesn't want to hear people blabbering all the time, where before I used to enjoy that, you know, a lot, the chatter, the conversation, the noise, the busy restaurants, the blah, blah, blah. And now I just want to be apart a lot. So it's like the very thing that's got me sad is the very thing that I'm now fitted for. It's kind of interesting.
Keith, you told us at the end of 2020 that you really missed poetry readings in person.
Yeah.
And, you know, Des was just talking about the wish for community. Is that something that's still on your mind?
It is. I miss the, Des, I told April then, I've been to so many, I mean, I've been to thousands of readings, and I thought I was sick of them. But I found that, you know, not being able to do that and sit with five people and listen to something that might not even be very good, maybe that was my strongest sense of a community and being part of a community. But I do miss it, and I don't know when that's going to start again. Most people, I think most of my friends, are comfortable doing these Zoom readings. And I, not that I'm uncomfortable doing them, but they don't feel satisfying either as a presenting author or as an audience member. They feel a little too confident. Look, I'm here in my study. Look at my books. I'm going to read you my poems. Whereas standing in front of a small audience in an auditorium or a bookshop sort of makes you feel more vulnerable, and I think that's usually better for the work you're communicating. So I miss that. I will love it if that happens again. But even if we go back to normal, that particular little very boutique-y aspect of our cultural life might be gone.
Keith, you told us earlier that there's a poem that has really stayed with you this past year.
It has.
Would you share it with us?
I'd be happy to. This was in my life before he passed away, and he died last week. One of several writers who died last week, Adam Zagajewski. I'm going to read the poem called "Try to Praise the Mutilated World" by Adam Zagajewski, one of the major Polish poets of our time. Interestingly enough, and fortuitously, I am told, this is the poem that appeared in the New Yorker the week after 9/11. I actually keep it and present it often when I want to show what different kinds of nature poems can do. This particular version is translated by Claire Kavanaugh, by the way. Remember June's long days and wild strawberries, drops of rosé wine, the nettles that methodically overgrow the abandoned homesteads of exiles. You must praise the mutilated world. You watch the stylish yachts and ships. One of them had a long trip ahead of it while salty oblivion awaited others. You've seen the refugees going nowhere. You've heard the executioners sing joyfully. You should praise the mutilated world. Remember the moments when we were together in a white room and the curtain fluttered. Return in thought to the concert where music flared. You gathered acorns in the park in autumn and leaves eddied over the earth's scars. Praise the mutilated world and the gray feather of a thrush lost and the gentle light that strays and vanishes and returns.
Oh my gosh. There's so much in there about embracing what is most difficult to embrace.
Yeah, there's no, self-delusion there at all. It's he sees things but yet still strives to put it in a context that includes the possibilities of joy.
Well, I guess that's where we are right now, is still striving. Keith Taylor, Des Cooper, it's really, really lovely to hear from you both. Thanks for checking in.
Thank you, April.
Thanks for inviting me.